Welcome to New World Notes number 168, Corporations versus Schoolchildren. I'm ambivalent about our public schools. Sometimes it looks like their real mission is to crank out good conformists, good consumers, and docile workers, rather than educating young people and teaching them to think critically. And yet, I think enough school teachers really do care about educating children, that if a child is lucky, she often can get a pretty good education in public school. I have a 13-year-old in public school, and I want that school to succeed. Here's one thing I don't want: turning public education over to corporations to milk for their own profit, and all paid for by taxpayers. This process is well underway. It's being pushed by Obama, by all the Republicans in Congress, and by loads of Democrats, too. And the Business Roundtable, the Chamber of Commerce, the Koch brothers, and every other greedy business interest. Are you afraid yet? Today we'll look at two ways the business interests are attacking our children. The first way is their attack on public schools, on teachers, and on public employee unions, the last bastion of worker protection in America. The goal is to take over schools and milk them for profit. We'll hear from Glenn Ford and Mumia Abu-Jamal on this. The second part of the attack is getting into the classroom and advertising products to a captive and immature audience. But let's start with attacking schools and teachers. Here's Glenn Ford.
If there is any arena outside of waging aggressive war where the Obama administration shows itself to be in near-perfect continuity with its Republican predecessor, it is in education. President Obama last week staged a mutual admiration fest with George Bush's brother, Jeb, at Miami's Central High School, where Obama celebrated the common ground he shares with Republicans on educational policy. The president proudly proclaimed that he has no ideological differences with the Bushes over education. That is an understatement. In fact, Obama has taken George Bush's No Child Left Behind program as a starting point to launch his own so-called Race to the Top, an all-out assault on teachers' unions and the very nature of public schooling in the United States that advances the corporatization of American classrooms in ways that Republicans never could. Obama is counting on Republican support for reauthorization of No Child Left Behind. As well he should, since George Bush's program opened the door to Obama's efforts to break teachers' unions and create a national system of charter schools. The differences between George Bush's educational policies and Barack Obama's are in emphasis, not intent. In a practical sense, Obama's policies represent an even bigger danger to public education. In the slick, sly way of the corporate Democrat, Obama avoids the worst rhetorical excesses of his Republican partners in the anti-public education project. You won't hear Obama's education secretary, Arne Duncan, calling the nation's largest teachers' union a terrorist organization, as Bush education chief Rod Paige did back in February of 2004. Instead, Arne Duncan travels around with arch-reactionary Newt Gingrich and Obama's black pit bull, Al Sharpton, on a Three Stooges tour promoting their common agenda for non-union charter schools run by private companies. Obama fires teachers en masse in numbers beyond George Bush's wildest dreams, while making hypocritical noises of support for the profession. And because he's a Democrat, the leadership of the two national teachers' unions pretend Obama is a friend, or at least the lesser of two evils, when in reality he is the greater threat. Under George Bush, the Republicans were ideologically wedded to providing public money for private school vouchers. Charter schools were their second choice for weakening public education. But corporate Democrats, like Obama, saw that charterization was a much more politically acceptable way to privatize many more schools in a much shorter period of time, while maintaining the veneer of public education. Most importantly, charter schools are the best vehicles for handing control of education over to private corporations, while the public continues to pay all the costs. Hedge funds and all kinds of speculators and hustlers have discovered that charter schools are a no-risk, potentially high-profit proposition, that is, no risk to themselves. The charter school racket is the perfect Trojan horse for corporate domination of the classroom at public expense, opening up a new, wholly subsidized educational market valued at hundreds of billions of dollars a year, in which the public pays and the private parties profit. And that's why Obama is a greater danger to public education than the Bush brothers ever were. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford.
The ethnic cleansing of New Orleans has gone well, and the ethnic cleansing of Detroit is off to a good start. Destroying the city's public schools is part of the process. Or so argues Glenn Ford. Here he is again.
Corporate America and its servants in the Democratic and Republican parties care nothing for the education of black inner-city school children, and the proof is in Detroit for all to see. The state of Michigan, controlled like every other state in the country by big business interests, has ordered Detroit to close down half of its public schools and increase class sizes to 60 students. That's double the number that any respectable educator considers suitable for classroom work, and tantamount to a declaration that Detroit's public school students will not be providing an education at all. In a modern society, this is the equivalent of declaring Detroit, an overwhelmingly black metropolis, a failed state. This racist outrage is blamed on a $327 million school budget deficit, just as when the public schools were decimated twice before in recent years, eliminating 79 schools and reducing enrollment to about 84,000 students. Many of those public schools were then sold to private charter school companies. With every assault on public education, charter schools multiplied. Now, 54,000 Detroit students attend charter schools, and even before the current crisis, the corporate enemies of public education were gleefully predicting that charters would overtake public school enrollment by around 2015, which would make Detroit the second major American city in which charters outnumber public schools. The other city is New Orleans, where 70% of the students attend charter schools, the highest proportion in the nation. New Orleans and Detroit have something else in common. They have lost more population than any other U.S. cities. And if that is not by design, then why are so many rich white people so happy about it? The rulers of America have decided that predominantly black cities are to become relics of the nation's past. In New Orleans, they had a hurricane to help them with their ethnic cleansing. But elsewhere, public policies must be crafted that make the cities uninhabitable for much of the existing black population. Sometimes gentrification does the trick, but one needs lots of affluent white people to push black folks out of town, and that takes time. But Detroit is to be emptied out in a hurry by doubling classroom size and utterly ruining the public schools. Then the education entrepreneurs and hedge fund managers and billionaires can build the kind of charter school system they want, with the kind of children they want, and without the teachers' union, which they definitely do not want. The privatizers always claim they have only the best interests of the kids at heart. But if that were the case, they would never even consider doubling classroom size to 60 students and keeping it that way for at least the next 4 years, during which time very few students would learn anything. After 4 years of deliberate torture of children, lots of those kids and their parents will be gone, which is an important object of this cruel exercise. And if the privatizers have their way, the teachers' union will be busted. Then, who will be left to demand, as Detroit's teachers have repeatedly done, that classrooms be small enough for students to have at least a chance to learn? For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
Finally, here's Mumia Abu-Jamal on the corporate-funded attacks on teachers.
Teachers, bad. Have you noticed that politicians flit from boogeyman to boogeyman? A process of demonization that is usually little more than misdirection from more pressing issues. According to a number of new governors across the country, the newest boogeyman, and I guess boogeywoman, are teachers who are portrayed as greedy, selfish, and overpaid. Now, honestly, who better fits that description, teachers or politicians? The politicians control the public purse and the microphones of power. They thus are well placed to scapegoat people who are often the hardest working, most thankless, least respected, and poorly paid public workers of them all, teachers. Every school year, tens of thousands of teachers dig into their own pockets to purchase markers, pencils, paper, and sometimes books for other people's children. Each year, some local government or school board cuts staff, divides a budget, or cancels a construction contract, for they know that teachers, being teachers, will make do. They accept it, because many of them love teaching children and see it more as a mission than a job. At bottom, this is about politics, not economics. It's about crushing teachers' unions that trend Democratic and donate millions to Democratic candidates. It's also about the goal of the weakening and destruction of public schools to promote the business of private education. Like many political ideas, it's penny wise and pound foolish, for it discards the central role of every society since antiquity to teach the young how to survive in the world to come. Public education is failing today, not because teachers are paid too much or educational institutions are awash in too much public money, but they're getting too little. This is especially so in America's central cities, where funds are raised through property taxes, and many parents rent their homes. The erection of the business model means those who can afford the luxury of an education, and only them, will be able to buy it. It also means the further crumbling of the empire. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Now for the second prong of the attack. Corporations are getting into the classroom in several ways and promoting their products to captive audiences of children. Some schools are so underfunded that administrators will let the corps in because they desperately need the money that's being offered. We'll hear small sections of a Canadian video documentary called Corporations in the Classroom.
And recognition, after all, is what it's all about. It's called product placement.
This is a math textbook. It's an M&M's textbook where you learn to count. And we got this from a grade one teacher whose daughter brought it home. They were given this in school. And it's quite lovely because what you do at the beginning of the book is you open up your bag of freshly purchased M&M's, you drop them on the countertop, and now you're ready to learn how to count.
Rules. That's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. There's no question.
The kit for kindergarten, Dr. Rabbit and the Legend of the Tooth Kingdom, with a teacher's guide and a video and posters again and storybooks and 35 samples of Colgate toothpaste, these little ones. Colgate is just everywhere. I mean, Colgate's logo is in this case actually on what the students get. And so getting teachers to do your marketing for you is, I guess it's a good deal if you can pull it off, right? So this one makes me, as a teacher, this one would make me very uncomfortable.
Candies and toothpaste are being welcomed into schools all over North America because schools need money.
I think that there is a way to connect with kids in schools, but I think it's much more by a soft sell than a hard sell. If a company is able to help a school with equipment or a program or something that betters the student body population, if kids know that a company cared enough to do that, that in and of itself, I think, will enhance the brand.
Enhancing the brand is what we're doing here.
We will do the rest of
Does anybody remember back to when I was first telling you what our school can get for doing this testing?
Can't remember? Think on it for a minute, Kevin.
Exercise.
Well, of course. That is a really important thing. Austin?
For the for money?
Yeah, good for you. We can earn some money for our school that we can use to buy more PE equipment. So, how can we use it? Well, I believe that the...
Where did you get the money?
The money is coming from the Go Active Fitness program, and there is a sponsor that is working with these people, and it's somebody you know pretty well, actually.
Who?
McDonald's. Yeah, McDonald's is sponsoring this.
You know what I would do if I was a fast food company?
What would you do?
I would promote exercise. And I would go all around the country, and I would go to schools, and I would tell kids to exercise. And everybody would think that I was such a great little fast food company. And I would just tell people to exercise, exercise, exercise. And I would distract them from thinking about eating all of the junk I was selling.
A couple of decades ago, school children across the country had their egos crushed as they went through the Canada Fitness program. There were sprints and jumping and chin-ups and medals handed out to recognize your level of fitness. Gold, silver, and lots of bronze. The government no longer runs that program, but now McDonald's has generously stepped in and offered schools the chance to win $200 worth of free gym equipment in what it calls its Go Active Fitness Challenge. It's a marketing partnership between the Hamburger Corporation and the Canadian Olympic Committee. And as a piece of advertising, it's all very subtle.
You have to look really hard to see those logos. I wonder why they're there. I mean, if they're so little, they're so tasteful, they're so innocuous, couldn't they just not be there?
I do think that businesses have a responsibility to the community, and by providing opportunities for kids, what they're doing is they're fulfilling their responsibility. So it's not an opportunity to advertise.
It's either altruism or it's marketing. Which is it?
We're going to get new equipment and stuff, and the McDonald's people are going to give us money.
Good, stop.
I think the fact that they are providing monies to purchase equipment, which is going to help in the development of activity levels, is a good thing. I think if the incentive had been free food, I think I probably would not have participated.
One of the problems in schools now is that there isn't enough gym space and there isn't enough gym equipment. So the problem is we need the equipment. And so this is going to be very tempting for teachers in schools. You really can't turn down, in lots of ways, $200 worth of gym equipment for students. On the other hand, why is McDonald's doing this?
Ron Christensen is the head of corporate communications for McDonald's Canada.
The thing with us is that we have always been involved in sport and developing programs for youth.
Mr. Christensen is anxious to promote the fitness challenge and the new healthy treats now available at McDonald's, with or without fries.
Can I get some apple slices, please?
That's the goal, is just to have them focus on the physical activity. Again, it's not about food. It's about activity. It's about the what I do part as opposed to the what I eat part.
That's contradicting what they say. Supersize this, but then score a goal. You know, so
it's terribly ironic that a company like McDonald's, which sells wholly unhealthy food, would want to get behind something like a sporting event.
Guess it's sort of nice to think for a second that McDonald's would be really caring about your children's well-being, but I think it's just sort of a PR thing that they're just trying to keep their image nice.
Tell me, what is your most popular food item?
The Big Mac. The Big Mac is our most popular food item.
How long do you think it'll take for apple slices to catch up?
It's hard to say.
Back in Surrey, BC, McDonald's has returned to Royal Heights Elementary. This time, to host an Olympic Day run.
when we're looking at the school as being a potential marketing environment, I mean, you are looking at an institution that is highly respected in the community. People feel close to. You're looking at an institution that has mandatory attendance laws, so if you want to target kids up to the age of 16, you know where they're going to be for 10 months of the year, you know, 7 hours a day, 5 days a week, they're in school.
Between 1990 and 2000, 10 years, advertising to children in North America has gone from $100 million to $2 billion.
Very young children can't distinguish between a commercial and a program. And until the age of 8, children can't understand persuasive intent. They can't understand the fundamental basis of advertising. So how is it that they can defend against it?
That's what this is all about. It's all about fitness. Okay, put your hands down.
It's completely naive, to my opinion, to believe that a child, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, even bright child, very well educated about marketing, is strong enough to resist the influence of experts, PhDs in psychology, who use their knowledge, sold their knowledge to a marketing company, and this marketing company is trying to influence the kid, and the kid will be able to resist that? That's uneven. That's unfair.
My name is Chris Stinnell. I'm from McDonald's, Canada, and again, I'm absolutely thrilled to be here.
No marketing ploy is left unturned to connect the Hamburger Corporation to a healthy lifestyle. Ronald McDonald appears to have been replaced by a national hero.
Lit from the sun. Here she is, the best athlete in the world, Cindy Klassen.
And this time, all the medals are gold.
So great. Let's have a big round of applause.
Marketing is a factor in so many of the problems that children face today. It's a factor in childhood obesity, eating disorders. It's a factor in youth violence. It's a major factor in the acquisition of materialistic values, the false notion that things will make us happy. So given that we know that marketing is a factor in all of those problems, what is the moral, social, ethical justification for marketing to children?
Anita Chapman, Curriculum Specialist, BC Teachers Foundation.
Well, when I was a little kid, I lived in Manitoba, and I went to a one-room country school. The only kind of corporate influence I can remember was that the map that rolled down at the front of the classroom, the map of the world, had little chocolate bars all around the edge. I didn't see any other branding when I was a little kid in school, apart from those little chocolate bars on the map, which might have been the beginning of a slippery slope.
Alex Molnar, Education Policy Studies, Arizona State University.
Well, I've been studying commercialism in schools for over 20 years. The mid-1980s is when I began to look at it in some systematic way and discovered there was an enormous amount of so-called sponsored materials in schools. They brought me boxes full of sponsored educational materials. They are free. And they come in more or less hidden. Many times they're mailed directly to teachers. Many times they go into classrooms and schools in violation of school board policy. But nobody knows how to stop it.
Well, I think that inevitably an industry is going to have a bias.
And it doesn't matter if it's the pork board that wants our children to know that pork is the other white meat. It doesn't matter if it's the Plastic Bag Association that wants our children to know that plastic bags are not more harmful to the environment than paper bags. It really doesn't matter what industry it is. They all want to do the same thing, and that is present a story and an image of themselves with something good rather than something bad.
McDonald's Olympic Dry Run, Surrey, BC.
So have you guys done this run before?
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah? Does it go around the school?
Ready, set, go!
in all species. Children, babies are protected against predators. How come within our own species we allow some people to use knowledge in psychology and use this knowledge to heal people and use it to abuse them? That's horrible. That's antisocial. It's not loving children. It's abusing them to make them wish this product.
It's never been harder to be a parent than it is today, because children are growing up in a commercial culture that is toxic for them. I mean, sometimes parents don't even know the kind of marketing that's going on in schools.
Corporations in the Classroom, ably adapted to radio by Robin Upton over at unwelcomeguests.net. I've borrowed so much audio from Robin, you probably recognize his voice by now. We'll have to come back to this topic later, because I've got a lot of great material I didn't have time for today. Since we do have a minute to spare, I hope you'll suffer through a little sermon. The connection between corporate interests and public schools has always been way too close. But enough teachers care enough about kids to do what they can to subvert the system. Our public schools are being systematically underfunded, just like every other public service, and for the same reasons. One is to break them down so, by force of law, they can be turned over to greed-head, profit-making corporations. All paid for by your taxes. There's a name for a system of government in which the government uses the coercive powers of the state to enhance the profits of big business. The name for that system is fascism. That is the essence of fascism, and it seems there's been a lot of it going around lately. A second thought, this country is very, very rich. No, you don't have a lot of money, and I don't either, but the people at the top are doing very well, thank you very much. This country is even very rich in tax revenues. Your taxes are being spent on war, war, and more war. And the wars are not to keep you safe, and certainly not to spread democracy. They've all been to increase the profits of the Fortune 500. I was born in 1950, and I cannot think of a single exception in my lifetime. Thanks for listening. New World Notes comes from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. newworldnotes.blogspot.com. You'll get to my non-carborundum. Please question authority. Somebody's lying to us. And hope to see you again next week. Ciao.